Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
It goes back a long way when I was a teenager.
Every Friday night, going to the pictures.
For the most part of my childhood as a local kid, the plaza was closed.
It just had an old-time elegance and vibe about it that just... you just knew you were in for something special each time, sort of thing. So,
to see me actually on that stage and for me to teach choir and show these children you can do this.
I just can't say how important it is for the town and how lucky we are to have it.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
These three bonus episodes are all about the Plaza Theatre in Coonamble, from plaza memories to what's happening now.
To support the restoration and reopening of this historic theatre, go to outbackarts.com.au.
The Plaza Theatre was purchased by Coonamble local Chris Gray in the year 2000. After being closed for around 25 years, Chris Gray worked on restoring the theatre until his death in 2019.
In this episode, we celebrate Chris Gray's ownership of the plaza and the important restoration work that he did.
Let's kick things off by walking through the theatre with Chris's friend, Ian Smith.
They had vision to make it into a basketball ring, and they just pulled everything out. That's what happened, and it just got stored for a lot of years. There was a video shop at one stage, and that's why it was pulled apart. A lot of the doors, I think they're original, the doors are original, but the rest is pretty well reproduced. In 2004, they basically got in and pretty well copied as much as they close as they could to what the original was. The early stuff here was done by Sue Bellamy, and Sue did a lot of the stencil work. She specialised in that, and she did a lot of restoration on the lead glass. And there was a funny story about Chris did the plaza ticket box here, and Sue walked in and she looked at it and looked at Chris and realised that Chris had put the Z back front. Everything was, so he had to do all that again. And Chris restored a lot of the lighting. He went to China and was able to get reproduction copies over there and got them made over there when he went over there. Like, this was over a period of, oh, maybe 15 years that he did this. Well, the ticket booth was actually sourced from the National Australia Bank when they renovated there for security reasons, and Chris was able to get hold of that. Moving along, yeah, we're under the, what you call the downstairs section. This was back in the 70s, was in the 60s, it was a segregated area. Which was hard to believe, it wasn't that long ago. The black proportion of people were down here and the white were upstairs, and that's the way it was. And I know when we were able to come down here and do roller skating, and it was fantastic to be downstairs and look up at the pitch, it was just totally different. We found it far more attractive to sit here and look up rather than look down. We're looking at a bar area here, just to serve drinks and stuff. This wasn't original. This was put in after. Chris was able to source all this stuff from the National Australia Bank when they did their renovations, like I said before. And the original ceiling, part of it's original, part of it's been water damaged. The plaster work we were able to save all that. That was stored. And we had a local builder came in, and Paul Wilson, and he put all that up, did the flooring, and also put all this corner section up. There was a couple of bits we had to remake, but most of it was restored. When we started renovating it, it was a bit of a mess. There's been pigeons and it was a hell of a mess. It was pretty run down. And I didn't know that he bought it. I was pretty good mates with Chris. And then he asked me and a friend who were willing to give him a hand to restore it, basically. Pretty daunting task, because we weren't builders, we were just mates of Chris, thought we'll give him a hand. So that's the way it was. The ceiling work, when we started, it was a massive crack on both sides here. anywhere up to, I'd say, 300 wide. And what happened, the roof had stayed there, and the wall had gone out. So we had to bring the wall back in, straight under the roof. And that took us about 3 years to do that, because we didn't know too much about engineering. A good friend of Chris's was Heath Williams. He was an opal miner. So he did a lot of the digging. He knew roughly how to underpin it. Was drilled down underneath, 5 to 6 metres down. We concreted it into a footing, and then we jacked them up. 30 or 50 tonne hydraulic jacks that Chris went to China and bought them for about $10. We had a box of them, and they're still in there. They're still there. We just jacked it up and poured the cement in and levelled it. That's what we did. And he sourced a lot of steel from the 2000 Olympics. Bought it relatively cheap. They basically pulling stuff down. So he sourced it all, and that's what we'll be able to make the frames out. Pretty daunting, I can tell you. Chris was pretty well liked in the community. If you didn't know Chris, you'd take him as a very crass person. But I can remember, I was really good mates with Chris, and he'd come out to my place, and I'm sitting there in bed, and I said to my wife, I said, there's someone in the kitchen. And here's Chris cooking bacon eggs. He said, what kept you? And he'd have the coffee and he'd have everything. That was Chris. He'd just help himself. When you come home, the dog's gone. Where's the dog? Chris had just taken it up to his block for the day out. Come back, here's the dog. Had a great time, you know. It was funny. Funny man. You'd walk into his shop. The first thing he'd say, what do you want? I said, I want this. He said, well, why are you here? I said, well, look, he was just that type of bloke. He thought if you didn't know it, you'd take it as rude or crass, you know. But, yeah, no, he broke a lot of hearts, Chris, and, yeah, he'd help anyone. Same with his, he was just passionate about things like that.
And it was lovely that a local bloke, Chris Gray, years ago, put a lot of money into it to restore. Yeah.
To be so passionate. Yeah. To have saved it in the initial stages, and how wonderful now that Outback Arts have taken it.
Seeing people getting around it and, you know, being so, I guess, in touch and sort of willing and whatnot to come up on stage and everyone gets around it, it's good to see that it's such a close-knit sort of community and everyone supports each other, which is pretty special.
I've just heard other people when we're outside talking about how they've seen a different side to people that they never knew, didn't know that they could sing. So you've probably got a lot of people in these small country towns who have that talent but don't ever have the chance to express it or to show it.
No, I have been here a few times over the years for random things, school dance classes. And
you can just feel the community spirit here. It's insane.
I think it's encouraging to see people being able to use their artistic nature and being able to appreciate people that they see every day.
Yes.
In a different light.
Chris Gray in a leotard. That's the only one I can. That was the best one.
I think because we know all the people that are in it, so it's always really fun and exciting.
Mirambilla, that was another great event that we had here.
I love it. I think it's great. And I think, some of them I know quite personally. Some of them, you know, a little bit not so personal, but
it's good to have people having a bit of fun.
Here's Chris's brother, Phil Gray, reflecting on his own Plaza memories and the time his brother owned the theatre.
Yeah, I can remember going there, paid threepence to get in, got kicked out a few times for mucking up. But no, it was really good fun times. In our time, there was no dancers there. They had roller skating. That was very big there for a few years. The old bloke that owned it, Semi Safaricus, he was good friends with Chris, and Semi bought it, and he was going to turn it into a theatre restaurant type thing. And he got sick, and he said to Chris, yeah, do you want it? And he said, oh, yeah, I'd love it. So he bought it off him. I think he paid $300,000, I think, for it. And, and then started all the work and you just couldn't see what he'd done, you know, there was so much work. Yeah, and he couldn't get funding from anyone. Because if it was a community-based picture show, picture theatre, they could get up to $1 million in grants for heritage and that type of stuff, whereas Chris couldn't get anything. Flogging a dead horse. Yeah. We did have a couple of movie nights for my children. There was probably only three or four of those, but that was great. Well, he wanted to have a theatre restaurant. That was his whole idea, you know, getting people from Orange and Dubbo and that type of stuff and doing that. I don't think he was much into the movie side of it. It was more into the theatrical side of it, yeah. Moranbilla, they used to come here and do some shows there, but they sort of went away from that and went to Dubbo and went to other towns. I don't know why. Yeah, but it needed a lot of work doing to it too. Like you can see the ceiling and that's been falling in and the gutters have been blocked and, you know, whatnot. And just so much work to be done. I'd reckon he would have spent, like in buying it and doing the restoration that he did, I'd reckon it'd be an easy $800,000 and you just can't see where the money's gone because all the back of the building and that was all cracking and he had to get an engineer to design the steel work to put it all up around the brickwork and whatnot. So there was a lot of work to be done. But I didn't have time to do it at all and I thought Outback Arts, they'd be able to get grants and whatnot. I think it's a good thing, for sure.
My name's Trine Lefave. I've been in Coonamble for 32 years. I'm not a local. And I've probably been part of the Cats for every bit of those 32 years. And we've just generally probably done a play every second year. We've had a few gaps where we've had like a four-year break because no one wanted to get things happening. But generally it's about every 2 years that we have our production. But I think Cats has been going on for a long time in the Coonamble area. I have seen a picture of my husband's grandmother in a production. So it's been going on for a while. And then there was a production that sort of kicked it off in the modern day, which was at the Kambara Hall. And that would have been, say, 35 years ago. And then they started doing productions at the Coonamble Bowling Club. And that's probably when I started. So I can't remember the first one, but it was a play. It wasn't a musical. I think it was a Neil Simons play. I was like 8 months pregnant. So it was really, I had a really odd part being that pregnant. I looked odd. And Liz Powell, she was a teacher. She was the director of that. And then after that, we just had different ones like usually musical audience participation. Dimboola was one of them that we did. Jungle Fever, which is, you know, you throw a bit of music in and there's song and dance and there's a bit of audience participation. And that's been going on. That was at the bowling club. And then I think about 5 plays ago, and I can't remember what year it was, when Chris had bought the Plaza Theatre, he said, "Do you want to use it?" And we went, "Oh, well, let's go and have a look." Oh, yeah, the whole building was just fabulous. You know, it was just such a great space. And we thought, right, let's do that, let's use it. So we moved over and our first production in the Plaza Theatre was called Mystery on the Orient Express, which was really fun. It was a huge cast. And we were just on this mission to make money because we had no money. So we just thought we were just on this mission to make as much money as we could to try and help Chris out. Mystery on the Orient Express had all the tables. We had all the tables lined up like they were train carriages. So there was first class, second class, you know, then there was the hurangers or whatever you call them in the last class, cattle class. So that was fun. And everyone just really participated in that. It was such a great production and I think just blew everyone away because we were doing 3 nights in. I think we just packed it to the rafters. And then we started opening it up to another night for the kids. Well, the kids were just sitting down the front, they were completely pie-eyed. You know, they just couldn't believe that they could see their mum on stage or their teacher on stage. And, you know, they put their hands up to join in. But that was when it became a real thing for the community and people started talking about it around town more. It wasn't just people buying tickets. It used to be just two nights, a meal, drink, you know, a drink and the production. And then it started to become bigger. There's probably nights where some people, you know, get too excited, a bit socially excited. They probably drink a little bit too much. We've had bits where, you know, people have sort of half fallen off the stage. We've had bits where people, you know, come back onto stage and they haven't got their costume on right or they've, you know, which is great. You know, that's what people enjoy. And I remember when I first went to a play, I could hear the prompt yelling out the lines at the side. And I thought, they can do that, I can do that. We've never had a prompt. We just say, just go with it. Don't prompt, just, you know, go with the flow. So, yeah, no, I just can't say how important it is for the town and how lucky we are to have it.
I love that they're restoring it and you can just feel the community, the spirit here. It's insane.
The grand stage, the old architecture, like blending in with sort of the modernity, like the bar is really fresh, the lighting's really nice. Like it's just the old blending with the new.
You see towns go through hard times, through droughts and tough times with anyone, family. And you get everyone in here just have a great laugh. It's bloody the best time ever. There's not a sad face here.
It's not yet, but it will be a centre where people can gather, you know, get together, tell a few lies and watch something amusing, you know.
Every time I've come here, the shutters have been down, so it's always been closed. So to come in and see it open and know that it's getting refurbished is great for the town. And the town needs a lot more of it.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. Yeah. How could you not want to put on a show when you walk into somewhere like this? So I absolutely think that will happen.
I don't know. I just love how beautiful and big it is. So, yeah, but that's the only time I've seen it open. And that was like when I was 10 years old. Yeah.
I think it'd be fantastic. I've never been in here before. And to come in here and look at all of this is amazing.
You just have to look around here and see how many people have come from far and wide just to see a couple of nights here. It's unreal.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's a piece of history and just living there right in the main street. It's great.
I can remember going to one of the theatrical plays at the bowling club and I can remember sitting in the audience thinking, I think I could do this. And it'd be a lot of fun. By the time I'd made my mind up for the next production, it was called The Desperados, which was a Western. And I just told Katrina Lefebvre, who was very heavily involved with the Cats, and she said, well, look, if anyone pulls out, we'll give you a call. So someone just pulled out and I started and I have missed a few productions, so Desperados and then I think it was Jungle Fever was another one at the bowling club. I then had I think a couple of years off and I think the next one was Rome Sweet Rome and then the last one was Robin in the Hood, which was our last production 5 years ago, which was 2018, and then COVID hit. Desperados, I played a saloon girl who was, you know, pretty, you know, friendly with the boys. In Jungle Fever, I played a jungle woman who hadn't seen very many men. So I was starting to get a bit typecast, I think. And then the next one was Rome Sweet Rome, which I played a maiden, which was, you know, pretty. So, and then the last one, and it must be showing my age because I played a lawn bowler with a fat bum. So I'm getting too old. They're starting to cast me now in some older roles.
Less sporty. Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative
and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.